listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Right now, you can lease a 2017 Blue Cruise from only $138 bi-weekly at Lakewood Chev.
This year looks a little bit slower and hasn't had the same production as Eves.
Well, certainly it hurts. No question, when you lose a top six forward like Patrick Eves, it hurts your depth. And, you know, there's no denying that. The Ducks have had to deal with more injuries than they would have liked during this playoff season. They played the entire first round without Cam Fowler, most of the first round, and the first couple games of this series without Sami Vatanen. They've been without Kevin Bieksa since game one of this series, and so now they have to deal with an injury to a pretty key forward. It is nice to have Corey Perry available to go back up with Ryan Getzlaff, because even though Perry hasn't had the numbers this season that he has in past years, he does have good chemistry with not only Getzlaff, but also with Ricard Raquel. And then they'll bring in Andre Kasha, I would assume, on the third line. Kasha played in the first game of the Calgary series when Nick Ritchie was suspended, and though he didn't put any points on the board, I thought he had a really good game. He's a creative guy, an offensive-oriented guy who can make things happen. So bottom line in the playoffs, I mean, you have to deal with whatever the injuries are and you know, find a way to fight through it.
Does Getzlaff change his game with Perry on his wing tonight?
I don't really think so. I think Getzlaff's game is what it is, you know, and he's been playing extremely well throughout the entire playoffs. And, in fact, since the beginning of March, when the Ducks came back from their five-day break, in my mind, Getzlaff has had a really good year, because for most of the season, he was kind of a man without a line. You know, they were shuffling wingers in and out on his line and didn't really find anything that worked, primarily because the Perry-Getzlaff combination wasn't working. And, you know, Getzlaff still put up pretty good numbers. And then, as I say, from the beginning of March forward, he's been terrific. So he's going to play his game, which primarily is a playmaker, but he's been shooting the puck more, and you see that in his goal totals.
Well, when you watch his shot, you're like, man, this guy should be shooting all the time. He's had a few laser beams for goals so far in this postseason. Now, down the Kessler line had the challenge of shutting down the McDavid line, and you know, they've done a pretty decent job. McDavid's line has contributed for 9 points, but Silverberg, Kessler, and Cogliano have combined for 11. Of course, Silverberg, they had the big fifth and sixth goals. Last game, he had 3 points. Randy Carlyle loves having that matchup. Do you think Todd McClellan might try to put McDavid out against Getzlaff and put Nugent Hopkins maybe as more defensive line on right now, the line that's producing the best for the Ducks, the Kessler line?
You know, it's kind of funny, Jason, because you know, the Oilers got the lead quickly in Game 2, and the Ducks were chasing the game. The Ducks got the lead even more quickly in Game 3, and then the Oilers were chasing the game. So obviously, as the home team, you have the last change, and tonight that works to Todd McClellan's advantage. But I think more important is how is the game going? Because when the Ducks were chasing games, you know, they had to go away from that matchup and try to find offense. Similarly, Todd McClellan made some changes in Game 3 with his lines because the Oilers didn't get off to a good start. So I think really the events on the ice during the game are what are going to dictate those kind of strategic questions. You know, we know the Ducks would like to have the Kessler line on the McDavid line if everything else is equal, but you never know how things are going to play out.
I mean, when we take a look at this series, it's been pretty interesting how it's gone. And, you know, the case could be made that the Ducks should be up 2-1 this series. Have you noticed a change the way that the Ducks are carrying themselves as far as confidence heading to this critical Game 4?
Well, what strikes me about that, Jason, is it's almost a reverse of the first series between the Ducks and the Flames. Going into Game 4 of that series, Glenn Gullitson talked about how he felt that his team should have won a game or perhaps a couple of games in that series, and instead they were down 3-0. The breaks just didn't go the Flames' way, the bounces and so on. You know, they probably deserved better in that series, and the Ducks probably feel like they deserve better in this series than being down 2-1. But they are down 2-1, and, you know, I think Ryan Getzlaff pointed out the other day that everybody talks about the Ducks being a veteran team. And in some sense, they are, certainly more so than the Oilers. But it's also a pretty young team, especially on the back end, especially without Kevin Bieksa. But I think the Ducks have enough veterans who've been there before, and we can even throw Jakob Silfverberg into that mix because he's been a big part of this team the last couple of years. You know, they understand that it's not necessarily about what you deserve, it's about what you get. The Ducks deserved to win Game 7 against Nashville last year, but they didn't win it because Pekka-Rinne stood on his head, much like Cam Talbot did in Game 2 of this series in Anaheim. So all of those things, that's just noise. The bottom line is, what does the scoreboard say at the end of the night? And to your point, have the Ducks carried themselves any differently? I really don't think so. I think they are pretty good at having an even keel and understanding what we just talked about.
Dan Wood joins us, analyst for the Anaheim Ducks, Game 4 tonight. Dan, I was looking for fun, and I know that the playoffs are still on, but the expansion draft is getting closer by the day, and the Ducks, and I assume they're going to be able to convince Kevin Bieksa to waive his no movement because he wouldn't get traded any or claimed anyway, so then they could still protect Vatanen and Fowler and Lindholm on the back end as well as Manson. But then if they do that, they only have the four forwards, and that means with the three no-movement clauses, you've got Raquel and Silfverberg, two excellent players. What do you think unfolds in Anaheim? Is Vatanen the guy, and then they maybe go 7-3? Do you think they would trade a winger, or would they trade a defenseman to rather than just lose one of those elite-level guys for nothing?
Well, I'm going to remind you that I am not, nor have I ever been, a general manager, or for that matter, have I ever worked in hockey ops. So I really don't know, but my speculation would be that they will protect seven forwards and 3D.
Okay.
There's no way on God's green earth that you can lose Rickard Rakell or Jakob Silfverberg. And with Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler being must-protects, you know, you've got to go 7-3 or else you have to expose one of those guys. If they're going to make a deal, certainly their strength is on defense, where they have kids like Brandon Montour and Shea Theodore, as well as some others coming. And I think, you know, they could conceivably afford to trade a defenseman. If they go 7-3, they probably have an open spot up front, too.
Yep.
So then, you know, if you can move a defenseman for a forward, you can probably protect everyone that you really want to. That would be my logic. But again, you know, Bob Murray doesn't very often ask my opinion on these kinds of things.
And maybe you should. I want to talk about that back end, and specifically Hampus Lindholm. This is a player that I've really grown to like over the last couple of years. Where do you think his game is at right now? We know he had some issues early this year, but at this point, are you feeling he's comfortable in his game? He's got another gear?
I think Hampus Lindholm is an extremely underrated defenseman. A lot of people question the plus-minus stat, and sometimes it can be misleading. But any way you look at it, Hampus always seems to be on the ice when the Ducks score and not on the ice when they give up goals. And that's a pretty good trait for a defenseman. You know, he's plus nine. He's been on the ice for 10 goals, 5-on-5, and only one against. So Hampus, I think going forward, his offensive game still has a lot of room to develop, and I think it will. He's still extremely young, without a lot of experience. But you look back over the course of his career, and his plus-minus numbers tell you that he's doing an awful lot right.
Well, the other thing I noticed crunching their penalty-killing numbers, when he's on the ice, their penalty kill doesn't get scored on, and when he's off, they're getting crushed. So you wonder if it's just a coincidence, but when it happens all the time, and you watch him, and he makes the smart play, not necessarily the flashy play, but the smart play more often than not.
Yeah, you know, and I really give a lot of credit to the development system in Sweden because, you know, Lindholm is one example. Silfverberg is another of guys who just really understand the defensive side of the game. And there are so many Swedish players who come over and, you know, coaches can trust them at a young age. There aren't as many of those types when you talk about North American players. So the coaches and the development system in Sweden deserve a lot of credit for the players that are being turned out. And I think NHL coaches love those guys.
Dan, as always, we appreciate your time. We'll see you at the rink. Enjoy some good Alberta beef for dinner.
Looking forward to it. Have a great show, guys.
Dan Wood, analyst for the Anaheim Ducks.